Welcome back to Mark Steiner Show. Folks, good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show. Always glad to have you part of this discussion as we lead up to this election. And today we're going to look at the question of misogyny and this election. Start off with, at the very beginning here, I quoted my wife, Valerie, who suggested to me that Hillary Clinton might lose this election because she is a woman. And that really wasn't far from wrong, I think, in many ways. We're seeing what's bubbling up on the surface. We saw things like John McCain, when he was asked a question, how do we beat this bee? He turned around and said, that, after looking a little nervous, he said, that's an excellent question. And when you look at the bee word, or call it a witch, those words are often used interchangeably. Tucker Carlson once said of Clinton, something about her feels castrating. Our friend Rush Limbaugh, will this country want to actually watch a woman get older before their eyes on a daily basis? And the bumper stickers we see, KFC Hillary meal deal, two fat thighs, two small breasts, and a bunch of left wings. Another one that I read, that I saw, said, even Bill doesn't want me. And then we have one presidential candidate who at the age 59 talked about assaulting women and more, and it's being said it's fine to say those things because it's just the way we are. As men, it doesn't mean anything seriously. So what does it all mean? You also see the polls that say that 50% of, most polls are showing that 50% or more of women are voting for Hillary Clinton, but a vast majority of men are voting for Donald Trump. So does this play sexism, misogyny, the question of men and women play into who we vote for? Kalima Young's back in the studio. Hello. This is her day and hour. And she brings us all these conversations of misogyny and rape culture in our society, teaches at Towson University and the University of Maryland College Park. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Dr. Kate Whitehead joins us, Associate Professor of Communication and African and African American Studies at Loyola University, Maryland, author of Race Brave, New and Selected Works, Notes from a Color Girl, The Civil War Pocket Diaries of Emily Frances Davis, great book, and Letters to My Black Sons, Raising Boys in a Post-Racial America. Good to see you, Kay.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And Kim Hannah Prater joins us. She's a PhD student in communication at the University of Maryland, College Park. And Kim Hannah Prater, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Thanks for having me.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org by email. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join in at 410-319-8888, whatever your thoughts are on this. And since it's always your hour, Kalima.
Oh, whoa.
Hi.
Hi.
So why don't you start off? A little thought about what I just said at the top of the hour.
Wow, you said a lot. I was talking about this before I arrived here, how these things that are bubbling up around Hillary Clinton, around conversations around misogyny and sexism that are so prominently being aired reminds me of the same kinds of conversations that were occurring in 2008 and in 2012 when President Obama was running for office, that when we are faced with these moments where we're supposedly post something, right? So Obama heralded the post, people thinking that we were in some kind of post-racial era. And then when we started seeing all of the pushback and the race-based pushback and prejudice, you realize that that's not the case. And people have been saying this. It's the same thing that's going on with this conversation around women, equality, feminism, that suddenly, supposedly after the culture wars, we've moved so far past. But Hillary Clinton's election is really bringing to the forefront that no, that illusion of movement is just about particular politics and bills. It's not about our actual feelings and understandings about women and rape culture and misogyny and sexism. That has never changed and has never moved. But now it's an elevated conversation again.
Never move, but an elevated conversation. I'm going to come back to that. Mm-hmm. Never move, but an elevated conversation. Let's come back to that thought in a moment. Hannah, let me bring you in since you've joined us for the first time. Welcome to the program. Your opening thoughts.
Hi. Yes, so I've seen in a lot of scholarship within communication and political studies that basically this is nothing new. I mean, the discrimination against female politicians goes back to the 19th century. With some of the earlier women who tried to get involved in politics, whether through presidential runs or through attempting to register to vote. So this is kind of just a chaining out of a long backlash against women who try to become involved within the political process. And then in some ways, Hillary has always had a lot of public negativity against her based upon her very active role as First Lady in the 90s and just continuing to be part of the political scene. So in some ways, you know, you're seeing an elevation of this because she is the Democratic presidential nominee. However, this is nothing new when it comes to women in politics.
Dr. Kay Whitehead.
Well, I think it's important as we begin this conversation, and I say begin on this show, but the conversation has been going on for quite a while. It happened when Hillary was first running against Barack Obama, when they were chanting the crowd of, what is she going to be like 3 days out of the month? Is she going to be more apt to push the button because she's going to be emotionally unstable? I think it's good for people to really understand this notion of misogyny, that this hatred or prejudice against women and girls specifically, that sexism can be applied to any gender, but misogyny specifically deals with women and girls. And it's not just in the treatment, it's hostility, it's hatred, it's male privilege, it's belittling of women. It's sexual assault. All of these things fall on this notion of misogyny. And so when we talk about how it's being applied at this moment to Hillary Clinton, it's not new in the ways in which it's being applied to her. It's just as we're talking about having it heightened during this campaign season, we're seeing things like the open use of calling her the B word. Mm-hmm. We're seeing things about, you know, referring to the fact that she has, you know, her menses and she has her cycle, that perhaps that affects her ability to think clearly. We see things about what she looks like and whether or not the fact that she's getting older, and I think she's actually younger than Donald Trump, but the fact that she's going to get older means that she's going to become less civil-minded if she continues to age, and we know that she will while she's in office. And I think there's a big concern even with the way she dresses. I mean, I know she's mm-hmm. part of the pantsuit club, yeah. but there was a lot of pushback when she once had a low-cut blouse on, you know, written by Robin Gavin, talking about how there was cleavage on display. And, you know, you have the news, CNN spent 4 minutes talking about the cleavage and not about what the issues that she was addressing, where people had to push back and say, it's just a blouse. Like, you're spending more time talking about how she's dressed and less time talking about the issues in the ways in which we don't put male candidates under that type of scrutiny. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about how they look and whether or not they're unstable because of their emotions. We never talk about them aging, because in men, you know, as you get older, it's being seen as a wisdom thing rather than something that works against you. And I think that people should be clear about the two terms as we're applying it specifically during this political campaign season.
So, folks, who join us at 410-319-8888. So I wonder how this, do you all think this really also affects the vote in this country? There's an article that was written that I was reading in the Washington Post by Jennifer Rubin. It was more of an opinion piece, actually, where she talks about angry white abusive males. This is not just a race thing just about white men, but angry white abusive males who have kind of attacked Hillary Clinton and attacked women, Giuliani, the governor of New Jersey, mm-hmm. The other kind of attacks that have taken place, Gingrich on Fox 45 telling mm-hmm. the woman interviewing him that you think too much about sex, you're mm-hmm. obsessing on sex,
yes.
obsessing
mm-hmm.
on sex. I mean, so all this kind of comes through. So what effect do you think this has on the political process? I'm really curious how you think that affects it, and where that may be taking us. Hannah?
Well, I mean, it's a combination of things, honestly. You do see the sexism and the backlash against Hillary as, you know, a prominent female politician. But, I mean, of course, there's also public response to some of her own activities as well as Secretary of State, previous activities, even blaming Hillary for some of the actions taken by President Bill Clinton during his term. So in some ways, I've noticed a lot of victim blaming, where it's like, well, if Hillary supported this, then that means this is her fault. You know, if Hillary said this thing 21, 22 years ago, we can't, you know, accept apologies. And I wonder, you know, when I read articles or when I see news about the ongoing email scandal, if it's really such an issue related to her email specifically, or because if she as a female was the one responsible for these emails. For example, I'm always thinking, like, you know, where's the focus on Donald Trump's tax returns? Why aren't we continuing to hear this every day? And I know, you know, there's differences between the two, but it makes you wonder, like, I was watching the Today Show this week, and I was seeing how there were questions about how basically there was this focus on James Comey and his response to the emails and Huma Abedin's emails. However, some people were wondering, why aren't we questioning more about Donald Trump's connections with Russia, for example? So kind of like, is there more focus on Hillary's action because she's the female candidate, and that kind of lets Donald Trump get a pass on some of his, you know, connections, or just basically glazing over his tax returns? Mm-hmm. So those are some things I've been questioning.
Okay.
Well, I just wanted to add that I think that as we talk about Hillary during this season, it is not new. The attack on women that has taken place throughout, you know, the foundation, the building of the American culture. I mean, during the time when women were considered to be property, the fight to even be allowed to vote by 1920, and then the push to be recognized, the push to get into universities, the push to break the glass ceilings, the push to be welcome and open and honest in our conversations with others about the rights we should have over our own body, the conversations we have even around abortion and making choices about our body that have to be put through laws if we are unable to make decisions about what happens in our own body. People are allowed to smoke and do all kinds of things to our bodies, but we have to decide and have the government decide for us whether or not we can have an abortion. So these notions of the ways in which we treat women, the ways in which we see women, the ways in which we expect women to do things, it is not new. And so it's not the hatred that's coming out in this campaign against Hillary Clinton as a woman. It's the fact that this country has some deep-seated issues around women being in positions of power. It's whether or not they can actually see that a woman could lead this country in the same ways that it took them to be able to see that a black man could lead this country. And for many people in America, they never really accepted it. And we can see that in how it's played out with Barack Obama's presidency and the hatred and the pushback towards that. But I think that we're really not wrestling with this in the same ways that we tried to wrestle with this notion of a black president. I'm thinking about with Barack Obama, the conversations that we had trying to deal with it and trying to talk about what that meant for our country. People are talking about Hillary, and you have these little sexist accounts, and I think some people forget the fact that it is historic what mm-hmm. she is doing at this moment, and whether or not it's going to actually break the glass ceiling, I don't know. I mean, we thought it broke the ceiling when Barack Obama got elected, but then mm-hmm. the very next campaign, it was whiter than ever, you know, back to what the norm was. So right. I'd like to see what happens after this in the curriculums being taught across this country.
Right. And I think another key element, just going back to the idea of angry white abusive males, if one thing this election season has given us an opportunity to see what angry white abusive males are, who they are, who has the power, how much this way of being is embedded in the political culture of the things that run this country, in our corporations, in our boardrooms, in the judicial system, and perhaps if we can harness this opportunity to show this is what angry white abusive male power actually looks like. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it played out, unfortunately, on the body of this woman in a very public sphere. But at least we can, people can't so easily gaslight us out of existence, out of understanding and saying, no, there's something that's going on here. And I think that is what if anything, we can see productive in this, is that we cannot be gaslighted out of our understanding of right. seeing misogyny on display and the abusive power of white male toxic masculinity in this country. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. Don't yeah. hold back now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just feel strongly about that.
No, I'm just messing with you. Right.
This is a passionate conversation.
No, it's important. I think yeah. that it really is. I mean, I think that we have a hard time wrestling with this in a very public way.
Yeah.
In a very deep way, in terms of how deep this issue is and how it does play out in the body politic, mm. And we're seeing it play out kind of very obvious ways on these comments people are making. But it's the undertone that's really kind of pushing this. I think that we have to get to. And I want to get into that undertone. Let me open the phones first and get okay. some thoughts in here at 410-319-8888. Your ideas and thoughts as you look at sexism, misogyny in this presidential campaign. And I'll hold my thoughts for a moment and go to the phones. 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes. Good morning, Mark Steiner.
Good morning, Leo Burrows.
Hello, Leo.
Hello to all of you. I must tell you that when we talk about white male dominance, and misogyny and sexism and institutional racism, they seem to come out of the same box, don't they?
Yes.
I mean, it's all there together. And then I didn't hear you say, but it sounds like, you know, J. Edgar Hoover's FBI is involved here.
Yes.
With James, and I don't mean drag queen dressing,
right.
But I mean with Comey,
right.
James Comey. It seems to me that Elijah Cummings can't have it both ways. Elijah said that he likes James Comey, but he didn't act right. Well, can James Comey be impeached?
Wow.
Is he subject to the law? Where's Loretta Lynch in all of this?
Mm.
All of a sudden, she's silent. The president of the United States, he's silent. He said he can't speak to this issue. Well, I'm going to speak to it. I don't feel sorry for Hillary because she's a poor woman, because she's a rich white woman. But I feel that what is being done is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly wrong, and it's vicious. And it's all the things that you guys just said it was. Red meat being given to the white militias in this country.
Right.
Southern Poverty Law Center will document all of that.
Yes.
Donald Trump represents the worst of white male dominance and pornography.
Yes.
And racism and all of that in together. These are dirty tricks, are they not? The
yes.
worst kind of dirty tricks that are manifest in this arena. And we've got to fight for the right reasons until justice is afforded us.
Amen.
But it sounds like we've been this way before, and apparently, Mark, we're going to go this way again. I don't know where this country is going, but I'm very fearful of concentration camps that come from this kind of dominance and hatred. Where are we?
Leo, thank you so much.
Always Leo's preaching this morning.
Always good to hear your impassioned voice, Leo. Kim, do you want to have a response for Leo?
Yeah, definitely. I do want to respond. Thank you so much, Leo, for your comment. You know, I just want to add to this that basically a lot of this support we're seeing publicly for Donald Trump is coming from, and you'll hear this is not my term, this has come from the news, but like, the white, un-college-educated, you know, populace. And in some ways, with the presidency of Barack Obama, with the nomination of Hillary Clinton, this group is seeing themselves as kind of being excluded from their America. And it's like, what's next? Okay, women are going to get more rights. And then, you know, gay people are allowed to vote. And even, like, it's just really sad to see how, you know, Donald Trump has been able to tap into this, even though his whole life is basically polar opposite for what they truly believe in. Donald Trump is not evangelical. Donald Trump doesn't truly care about this white, uneducated or uncollege educated group. He's basically using their either some people within these groups, sexism, or some people within these groups, racism, and using it in order to achieve power for himself. I've been really disappointed in kind of like seeing the tactics of Trump's, you know, campaign and the people who work for him to try to kind of like in some ways disavow that that's what they're doing, but not completely dismissing sexism, racism. In some ways, kind of encouraging it. You'll see, even if you go back to some of Trump's speeches about like joking about, oh, the Second Amendment folks should do something about Hillary, or, oh, you know, we've got this issue with Mexicans, we got this issue with Muslims, we got this issue with all types of groups, and just like the stirring up of the hatred within these groups, and it's just really sad. I mean, in some way, I mean, yeah, the misogyny is clear, but it goes far beyond that. You can't speak about Trump's use of misogyny without also speaking about his use of racism, his kind of like dismissing of quote unquote the establishment, kind of like we can't trust Hillary, we also can't trust the Republican Party. And it's like if you're drawing upon these voters who have possibly traditionally voted for Republicans, How can you just turn around and say, like, you can't trust Paul Ryan, you can't trust your elected officials? It's kind of like, it's really ironic, and it's kind of an oxymoron in some ways to be like, oh, you guys voted for these Republican leaders, you can't trust them. And it's just like, I don't even know how it works. And so, it just really amuses me, but also frightens me.
So we have a break here in a second. I know I want to go to the phones here. Unless one of you want to jump in with a thought.
Yeah, I just had two things. Maybe we can talk about it more when we come back. But one, Donald Trump is from the universe of reality television, i.e. he really understands coded language and how to use it. Right. Mm-hmm. So he's really he's really understands how to use coded language and what it means and what it signifies. He is the best semiologist I've ever seen, that on one level. And then also what we have is a public that is used to false equivalencies as some idea or measure of equality. Mm-hmm. So people can make this everything that's happening with Hillary, they can blanket it down and flatten it into lesser of two evils, or these are two evils. Right. And I think those two things, an understanding of coding and semiology and a pungent for false equivalencies in our dialogue, is creating this opportunity where we're not truly delving into the issues that we have at hand.
And I think we do have to take a short break here in just a moment. How much time? We have time for one quick call here today.
Okay,
then we'll come
ahead.
Right back. And I do also want to explore this idea that just like the racism around Barack Obama's campaign forcing people who might not ordinarily vote for his politics to vote for him because of that onslaught, the same thing I think is happening with the onslaught with Hillary, which is why people may be voting for her in some ways, even if they don't agree with her politically.
With everything.
Yeah, so that's how complex it gets, right?
Yes.
And
where
that it holds true for folks voting for Trump as well.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
The mirror image of that. 410-319-8888. Gina in Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it.
Call. I joined a little late in the conversation, so I don't actually know anybody's names, but I read about this topic a lot, and I kind of noticed even in this discussion, right before the very first caller, one of the women had finished talking about toxic masculinity and just what the abusive white male culture looks like and all of that, and then the male in the room had said, oh, wow, don't hold back. And, you know, it kind of took me by surprise because I thought she was just kind of saying what she thought. And it surprised me. And I thought, oh, is this one of those instances where it's so embedded in the way that we think we don't even realize we're telling women, like, whoa, chill out, sister, you know.
Darn you.
You know, it's okay for women to stand up and be passionate about things and like, preach and just, you know, with that same level of intensity, but I think it surprises us when women do it still. So.
Nice. Gina,
definitely something to keep in mind.
No, I hear you, and I do appreciate your critique. I always like critiques on the air like that. I think that, you know, that might have been some of the subtext that happened to me without even realizing it. That's really possible. I thought of it more of my very close relationship with the guest Kalima, because we've known each other for a long time, kind of playing back and forth. Maybe wasn't appropriate on the air because folks don't know that, and so it could have sounded like that. So you're right. I think I'm glad you pulled pulled me up in the show up about that. I think that made some sense.
We're watching you, Steiner.
I know you are. I better go to break. We'll
all
be back. Don't
out.
Go away. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'm here with Kalima Young, Dr. Kay Whitehead, and Kim Hanna-Prater, and you all at 410-319-8888. Right to us here, talk at steinershow.org. And so it's good to have you all with us here. And I do appreciate the call, Gina. I'm glad you called in with that. I mean, that was important what you said. I think that, and I'm glad we could wrestle with that for a minute here on the air. And so as you're driving around wherever you are in Delaware, keep on listening to the Mark Steiner Show. Don't turn away. For, that's good. You want to go right to the phones here? Or when, did you want to?
Can I make a quick comment? I just wanted to say
Okay,
that.
Wait,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Wait,
no,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to make a quick comment. I think that it's very easy to always go back and, oh, it's Donald Trump who's doing this. Oh, Donald Trump, who is the worst. I definitely believe that. But that this, we have to be clear, this was happening before Donald Trump. Donald Trump
That's
just
true.
Brought it to the forefront. But this kind of conversation about women, this kind of code language about women, the ways in which we kind of classify and tend to put women into boxes, it's been happening. The only difference is that Donald Trump is saying the things that were said around the boardroom, said around the kitchen table, said around the living room. He's saying it on the air, and he's not holding back, and he's not apologizing for that. I mean, he said all kinds of very vile things, but Donald Trump is not the problem here. He's just a manifestation of the problem we have in this country about the way women and girls are treated. And I also don't want to let black and brown men off the hook either, because even though we're talking about the white male at this point, we were kind of just kind of putting that out there.
Right.
There are black and brown men who don't have the microphone, who feel the same way, who are using this language in the street, who are participating in this type of misogynistic culture when girls are walking down the street, when girls are on the bus. I mean, that tweet of, you know, tweet the first time that you were assaulted had 30 million women and girls coming on.
Right.
And it wasn't just, oh, we're all white women, it's just rude white men. No, we are black, we're brown, we're Asian, we're Indian. It's happening. It's been happening since I was 5. One woman said it's never even stopped. It's continued on and on. And so the more I kind of delved into that with the research I was doing for that op-ed, I mean, it was just shocking. So I don't want to let black and brown and other men off the hook to just focus on the white male. And I don't want to put it all on the back of Donald Trump. This has been happening. It is a problem in our culture that we have to wrestle with.
Right. So if it, let me go to the phones here, but I do want to pick up on something that you said at the very beginning of the program, Kalima Young, and wrestle with it a little bit, which is not moving but elevating the discussion. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. But let me go to the phones first. So 410-319-8888. Andrea, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Good morning, Andrea.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling.
Great. Well, I'm really happy you're having this discussion. There's a lot to be said about what's going on in the political sphere publicly at this current time. But I also think that kind of the level of discussion that you all are having and the level of discussion that needs to be having, that needs to be occurring in the public eye has a lot to do, is reflective of the professional sphere in the country at the current moment. On the ground, you're seeing a lot of kind of sectors of professional, you know, work that is really moving women up through the professional pipeline at a very quick rate and at a much quicker rate than they are people of color in general. And so I work in the environmental sector, and the University of Michigan actually came out with a report last year that indicated such. And, you know, so folks are kind of like, okay, well, are we using affirmative action strategies in order to get more women through? It's great to see women pushed into leadership positions. But what I'm experiencing on the ground, because I am a woman of color, is that there's a lot of kind of invalidation, microaggressions, and you know, unintended, I would say, kind of sidelining that occurs of women in general, and in particularly women of color or people of color in the professional sector. You know, I live and work here in Baltimore, and so this is not something new to me. However, I mean, I think it's something worth mentioning, especially within the light of the womanist movement, which is very strong here. And also to say that it's Trump, you know, I totally agree. He's phenomenal at using coded language. It is literally a play on people's emotions and economic trauma that he speaks into. Perhaps their lack of control of which direction our country is moving in. And he's literally playing on people's emotions in the same way that, you know, can be dated back to Bacon's Rebellion, for example, which really, you know, caused the separatist shift, you know, in the working class and folks that were doing indentured servitude or, you know, versus slavery. Like, I mean, it's very, very deep root. So I just wanted to bring some of that up to the forefront. And
that was great, Andrea.
No.
It was a very powerful 2 cents. I deeply appreciate you calling in and being part of the program. And let's before we jump into what I want to wrestle with, let's wrestle with what Andrea brought to us. Yeah. Want to pick up? Well, Hannah? Kay?
Hi, yeah, I'll pick up.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is Kim. So,
Kim.
Thank you, Andrea, for your comment. Definitely, you know, it's so true, especially being a woman of color working within professional fields. I came from the field of television entertainment, and now I'm in academia, and it's you definitely see that kind of buffer from an enhancement in certain settings. That's part of the reason I left the entertainment industry. But I also want to follow up on something Dr. Whitehead was saying earlier. So Donald Trump is definitely not the reason why these issues exist, why the misogyny against women and politicians exists, but he is our current conduit of a lot of this hostility. If you look back to the Republican primaries, Donald Trump was challenging his competitors' masculinity. He was challenging their levels of energy. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, just like fueling a bunch of things and kind of like, and so it's like some of the techniques he was using against men, he's also using against Hillary. However, he has the additional element of like critiquing her, you know, in some ways, sexist language. So I'm saying like, this is not new or unique to Donald Trump, but his method of attack, you know, across the past, you know, presidential campaign season, it's just, not that it's unique, it's just very hostile, and in some ways making our political climate even more toxic than it already was. So I want to say that he's not a unique individual. I mean, you can go back to decades earlier and seeing what would have been a third-party presidential candidate, maybe using similar tactics, but he is our current conduit for this hostility and toxic level of political rhetoric.
But I think that then leads us into to having a more in-depth discussion. Like, I remember when I was in graduate school and we were studying the Civil War, and I remember my professor said that we're asking the wrong question. The question isn't how the South lost the Civil War. The question is, how was the South able to fight for so long, despite the fact they came into a war they were never going to win? I think when we talk about Donald Trump, that a better question to ask is not, why is Donald Trump so racist, and why is he so sexist, and why is he so... A better question is, what does it say about the American people who support a candidate is so openly racist and misogynistic and abusive and vile? What does it say about us that Donald Trump has actually made it this far? Well, he is literally a hair breadth away from being the president of the United States. What does that say about us? And that's the concern that I have. Donald Trump, even if he rides off into the night, even if he doesn't win, which is, you know, in my dreams, he doesn't. So even if he doesn't win and he rides off into the sunset, there's something that's been exposed in this country that does not begin and end with Donald Trump. He may be the conduit, he may be the lens, but all he's doing is pointing the spotlight on the sickness that defines our country that we are, again, not wrestling with. We were blaming Donald Trump. I hear it in all the pundits. Oh, it's Donald Trump, it's Donald Trump. Well, when Donald Trump leaves, the misogyny doesn't end.
Right.
And that's true.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I like that question. What does it say about us, you know? What does it say about us as an American people? I think what it says is it shines light on the lie of this frontier mythology, this rugged individualism, this imperialist tactics that we use to make ourselves seem like we are some strong nation, when really we're a bunch of bullies who take people's things, right? He's a bully who takes people's stuff.
Yeah.
And that is what American frontierism and the risk of like rugged individualism that we uphold as a part of American liberty and democracy, and that in all of that rhetoric that hangs out under the country that supposedly makes us unique as a people, when really all it is bullying and imperialism and taking. So he's exposing this in a very unique way.
Yeah.
And he's showing that people have bought into this lie of an American way of being, and that lie of this American way of being has so much political utility and will show up in so many different ways.
But it's a lie that's been there, right? So I'm thinking the lie of the westward expansion.
Right,
well,
exactly.
To go west of whom, right? It wasn't west of Asia, it was west of Africa. So the notion that there's a westward expansion then places America in the center of the world as the West, as the ones who can expand. So the lie we're talking about that's being exposed is the lie that just lays the foundation for our country. So how do we uproot that lie when we have built our entire system upon
it? And how do you uproot that lie and it's a complex question, this lie that you all are raising here.
Yeah. And how do you, we're both like, yeah.
How do you uproot that lie without uprooting the nation?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, my word.
So go to the phones. 410-319.
Maybe they might have the answer.
410-319-8888. Margaret, in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome. Good morning, Margaret.
I'm calling to get an answer regarding how do you explain the women that are supporting Donald Trump with his sexism and his menagerie. How do you explain that?
I think there's a couple of factors involved in this. I mean, not all voters or not all female voters for Donald Trump are going to have the same reasons. I mean, one fraction of this group will think we just really don't like Hillary Clinton and what she stands for as a politician. So you have those voters, like ideological Republicans, who are just, you know, just decide I can't support her policies or her positions. You might have another group, and I've been seeing this when I'm, you know, seeing some of the man on the street interviews with Donald Trump supporters. Some women just think like, hey, you know, we want, and this is going to sound offensive, but we just want another white man in charge. And it's kind of like, we want things the way that they were when we had a previous Republican white male as president. And then the rest, who knows what it could be? It could be some dislike of Hillary based on her being Secretary of State under Barack Obama. It could be dislike of her support of women having the right to make their own choices with their bodies. It could be even Hillary's support of gay marriage. I mean, there, within each voting bloc, there's going to be different reasons why a white woman would support Donald Trump as opposed to another white woman who's running for president.
It could be some type of sick Stockholm syndrome, because I do believe, and I have come across a number of women who don't believe women should be in power,
right,
who actually believe that lie, whether the lie has been rooted through your religion, through your father, through the ways in which you grew up, who believe women don't belong in these positions of power. So I don't think we can answer a question like, what does it say about all women? Well, let's just say that all people are different and they are supporting something about Donald Trump. What I really want to evaluate is not necessarily why women are like supporting him, it's what is it saying? Because if you look at Donald Trump and you can go, they say, you know, I'm not thinking about what he's saying. It's just kind of one comment. I'm not thinking about his comments around this. Then what are you actually considering when you're voting? Are you just saying, I don't want Hillary, and at all cost, I will vote for anybody who's against her? You can put up a donkey, you can put up a butterfly, a head of lettuce, no matter what it is, as long as it's not Hillary. There's some people who have that deep rooted hatred. I think that we shouldn't forget that the Clintons have been in our living room for, what, 30 years?
Right.
There are a lot of people who have watched the rise of the Clintons and have hated it every step of the way. And I'm not necessarily saying that I am not one of them. Watching the rise of the Clintons, as well as the rise of the public figure of Donald Trump. I mean, we have candidates who have been a part of our conversations for years and years. And these are not, you know, hope and change people. These are establishment people. Whether that establishment, like Donald Trump, is about white male power and money, or whether the establishment is the Clintons, both of them are coming from the same base, I think.
So, you know, it could also be, let me throw this out, and maybe I saw you getting ready to speak, but let me just throw this out, Kalima, that maybe it's also that there are women who look at what is being said about what Donald Trump says and other men say and what has erupted in his campaign as that's the way men are. And I'm used to men being that way. It doesn't mean
that I don't
think that I have power because I'm a woman. That I can live my life the way I want to. Mm-hmm. I can cook his meals. You understand he's going to be a macho fool because that's who he is. Mm-hmm. But that's his life. But I'm gonna. But I. You know. And but that's. Maybe that's when. That's how I like my men.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right, Cleo? I mean that is.
Yeah.
No. I'm serious.
Yeah. That, yes.
That's not. That's
yeah,
not.
That's
a,
no. Not,
that's true. Yeah,
yeah. No. I think that is a perfectly. I think that there are women in the world who like this is what I want.
Yeah.
I want a macho guy who's going to speak over me. I want men who want to be, who have this particular kind of masculinity that seems to appeal to me, that makes me feel good, makes me feel safe, and is very familiar. I can see that. I don't understand it myself, you know, but, you know, I got all kinds of things about that. But I don't understand that for myself personally, but I know that there are factions of women who are willing to put up with the mediocrity of toxic masculinity because it feels good.
Yeah. And familiar.
Feels good and familiar.
Yeah.
Feels good and familiar. And people know their roles, right?
Right.
In those kind of spaces, you know your role. Okay, if you're going to be this particular way, then I get to be this particular way, and I don't have to think about busting boundaries.
Right.
I don't have to think about expanding that boundaries. It all feels very safe. That's my thought on that. The other thing I wanted to sort of pull on, though, was Dr. Whitehead's idea of the rise of the Clintons sort of being in our universe. And I love how it's always the Clintons.
Yeah,
it's not the rise of Bill Clinton, mm-hmm. right? It's like Hillary is seen as part and parcel, mm-hmm. even to the point that she is blamed for her husband's mm-hmm. misogyny. And sexism,
yes,
and adultery,
and the adultery.
That second debate with those Clinton women,
with the Clinton women standing out there, or the whole entire conversation about, well, she couldn't keep her man in check,
right, yeah.
or she went along with it in terms of him abusing women, or all of these kinds of conversations where you can't untangle. Hillary from Bill.
They did that,
right? I know.
A little pushback there. I mean, I think just a little. I mean, okay. I think people had the same thing with the Bushes, and it wasn't around sexism.
Right.
It's the Bushes.
The Bushes.
It's the Clintons.
Yeah.
It's dynastic.
Right. It's power couples.
It's the Obamas.
It's the Obamas.
Right. It's the Roosevelts.
But I think Clinton is even more so. I'm thinking back when Bill Clinton was president. I mean, I'm going to say I was probably just an arm baby at this time. But when Bill Clinton was president, the fact that Hillary
I had babies in my arms at that time, probably.
But Hillary was lockstep with him. She was pushing Hillary Clare, right, which is a health standardized act. She was involved with political conversations. She was someone who was not just in the White House. She was not kind of like the first mom of the country. She was involved in politics and policy and practices and laws. So they kind of created the Clintons way back before the White House. I just want to note, too, Mark, if I can give a shameless plug, I did tell you earlier, but that I am dropping today the Clinton syllabus. And mm-hmm. in this Clinton syllabus
wow.
about the ways in which we teach Hillary, which will be dropped today at 5 p.m., and you can get it at kywisewhitehead.com, the ways in which we teach Hillary, we start this syllabus with talking about Hill and Bill. Because mm-hmm. how were they in lockstep? Who was Hillary before Bill? Her speech she gave at commencement, and then the creation of the Clintons, and then this pulling away from the Clintons to become Hillary Clinton, and how that has not been successful in the long haul. Like, she's still part of the Clintons, even though we know she's running for president. People have this idea that when you vote, you're voting them back into office, not just her.
Well, I think that's also some people's kind of narrowness of thinking about what dynasties mean. But I think there's a dynastic issue in America in politics
mm-hmm.
that people are extremely concerned about, no matter whose dynasty it is,
yeah.
which is one of the reasons
right.
that Bush lost the primary to Trump.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Uh-huh. I mean, that's part of that dynamic as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me go a quick call in here before we get more callers in. 410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Steiner. Yeah, I just wanted to throw something out of it that you guests may not readily see it. Right away see it applicable to what you're talking about. I'm a great fan of Manly P. Hall. I mean, he just gets me to think for hours at a time on certain subjects. He has a lecture out where he did what is the unforgivable sin, which actually has nothing to do with religion at all. But there's a part in there where he talks about individual rights gone out of control, the freedom to express oneself and to aggrandize self, oneself, to live in a pattern of aggrandizement where you wish to be greater than the all, and mm-hmm. to the detriment of everyone else, you know. And Donald Trump just fits that pattern. You know, when I mm-hmm. listen to that lecture, he falls right in there. It's a very good lecture. It's called "What Is the Unforgivable Sin?" Manly P. Hall. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. So before we go back to the phones here, I do want to wrestle a little bit here with what was said very early in the program before we run out of time.
Mm-hmm.
When you said, Kalima, not moving but elevating the discussion, talking about sexism and misogyny in America, mm-hmm. don't know if I quite agree that we haven't moved, mm-hmm. But I do think we are elevating the discussion. I think we may have moved not as far as we want to move. but what does that mean for the three of you? And just reflecting, Kay, just reflect for a moment. We'll come around back to Kalima on that thought.
Well, I tend to agree kind of with what you're saying, this notion that we are expanding the conversation. We're reflecting on the conversation, whether or not the needle is being moved, whether or not people's minds are being changed, whether or not people's ideas are being expanded and being challenged. I am not sure. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm having the same conversations with the same people over and over again. These enlightened conversations that we tend to enlighten each other over and over again, mm-hmm. because it's staying within the circles. What I find is interesting is that the challenge is happening on the K-12 level. We're talking about kindergarten through 12th grade, where teachers are wrestling with these issues. The campaign of Donald Trump, it has forced teachers to talk about some very difficult conversations and topics in the classrooms, that when students hear Donald Trump's rhetoric, they have questions and they take them into the classroom. So teachers are actually looking for resources. How do we talk about Donald Trump? When the Chronicle published their Trump syllabus that came out a couple of months ago, it was a mock syllabus done in the same style, mm-hmm. the Say Her Name syllabus or the Lemonade syllabus, but they did the Trump syllabus. And the pushback from scholars around the country was, how dare you publish a Trump syllabus and you don't have any black or brown people on the syllabus at all? Mm. You publish a Trump syllabus to talk about the fact that Trump kind of, he's racist, he's misogynistic, and then you have a list of sources all by men, all by white women, mm-hmm. and you have conveniently left out the black and brown voices. Nathan Connolly from Johns Hopkins was one of the main people who pushed back against this, and they created the Trump syllabus 2.0 with black and brown sources. Like, that's part of the problem, that when you think about it, even from the Chronicle, your first thought when you gather 100 academicians together to pick all white male sources to kind of investigate, why is Donald Trump racist? Why is he sexist? Why is he misogynistic? Well, why are you using that same lens in the work that you're doing? So that's what I mean about expanding.
And Kalima? That's what I mean about not moving.
Right.
When I'm talking about we're not moving, that means that we might be having more conversations, we might be having more enlightened dialogues, but we are still using practices that oppress.
Right.
We are still committed to systems that create inequity. We're not questioning the undergirding system that allows his kind of masculinity, his kind of bullying tactics to actually move forward. We're actually saying she is trying to be a part of this power structure, as opposed to questioning the power structure altogether and how it works, right? And is the American system, our capitalist system, the way that we run things, is that necessarily the way that we organize ourselves as human beings? Mm. Is it natural and innate? And that's what I mean about not moving. Like, so we're elevating this conversation, but we're not getting to the root, which is the system is a piece of not so goodness. And thank you.
Thank you.
A system of not so much goodness. And that... until we actually question those kind of things that we see as fundamental, we're just going to keep having expanded dialogue, but we're not going to undo patriarchy and sexism.
So we have about 5 minutes left. Let me just jump in here, Kim.
Yeah, thanks to Kalima. Kalima and I actually took a women's studies course together a couple of years ago.
Yes.
And so I'm like, sticking truth, because at that point, we weren't really thinking about the upcoming election. Mm-hmm. And all these things are, you know, as a famous reverend once said, the chickens are now coming home to roost. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of seeing this in some ways, how is it that certain people support someone like Donald Trump, whereas, you know, traditionally, based on their own deeply held beliefs, that shouldn't be the case? I feel that one way that we can expand or elevate the conversation is to look at alternative sources of information. With my research, I'm focusing specifically on political satire, and you do have black and brown faces, women, who are speaking about what's going on in this election. You've got Trevor Noah, who has just expanded in his, you know, ability to discuss American politics in such a way that I think even resources like him may inform civic engagement in ways that you turn on the news, you may not hear everything you need to hear.
Right.
Listening to diverse voices to learn about what's going on in the election, what's going on after the election, instead of just only turning to white male faces for those sources of information. I think that's one way we can elevate the conversation.
So we're about out of time, and Adar Ayura sent in a tweet that would be a whole show to really get into by itself, because what you could agree and disagree with what she tweeted in, which is, we forget white women have often supported racism over misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
And caller, how do you explain women supporting Trump with his sexism, misogyny? And I think we talked a bit about that, but I often kind of wrestle with what I consider the complexity of all these questions,
right.
And I cannot get into either or mm-hmm. more than the other.
Exactly.
As mm-hmm. the interplay it makes us feel like it's hard to explain it, and it creates the insanity around it. Right.
You bring mm-hmm. your whole self to the conversation. You don't just bring in your white self or your black self or your female self. Your whole self is involved in these conversations, and that's extremely complex.
That's the notion of intersectionality from Kimberly Crenshaw. Right. That's why we do intersectionality, because you cannot separate pieces of yourself.
So exactly. An interesting discussion to have, perhaps, in the coming weeks after this election is over and we see where the country's going.
And the world's still surviving, the sun's still rising.
I think the aliens are going to come down. I think the aliens is coming. I think they're coming down. The aliens are coming.
That is Kalima, by the way.
Oh, that's me. I won't put that on my CV, but the aliens are coming.
She said it on air. They're coming. Here they come. They may be coming. Maybe they're here. But it is, people have called in on this show, but called in a lot, saying that racism is deeper than misogyny and,
right.
and trumps it. So, I mean, and other people call in saying the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I think that would be an interesting discussion to wrestle with in terms of this question of intersectionality at some point soon.
Right.
Where they fit together and how we parse that out, right?
Well,
right.
because they always inform one another. You cannot break these things apart. They are always part and parcel of the same conversation, which is creating and concretizing systems of power that oppress people and making people feel like those systems of oppression are natural and innate to how they're supposed to be in the world.
Yep.
So they're always in conversation with each other. They feed one another. There needs to be a longer conversation.
So we will do that. I think we have to do that. So that this has been great. Kim Hannah Prater, PhD student at University of Maryland College Park in Communication. Kim, great to have you with us. I'm glad you could join
us. Thanks for having me. This was an excellent conversation.
And look forward to having you back with us again. And my two good friends here in the studio, Dr. Kay Whitehead from Loyola University, where she's Associate Professor of Communication, African American Studies, and a brilliant author. Good to have you here in the studio.
Yes, and please pick up the Clinton syllabus, too.
Look
forward to that.
I want to see that.
Yeah, look for it.
Where is it?
It's going to be on my website, kywisewhitehead.com, and it's dropping through Facebook and Twitter today.
All right, well, just drop it on me so I can read it.
Boom.
And Kalima Young. Who teaches at Towson University, University of Maryland College Park, and courses host, co-host here on the Mark Steiner Show as well. Always good to have you in the studio, Kalima. Thank you for being your depth to the studio and to the air.
Thank you for having me always.
Thank all three of you. This is great. This is wonderful.
All right.
Okay, what am I saying? What year is this?
Okay. 2016.
We're taking a short break and coming right back. When we come back, we'll be looking at more about this election coming up. We're going to turn local, look at Question J, and look at the city council races as well. So don't go away. Stay with us.